translation. Your father, Virochana, the son of Maharaj Prahlad, was very affectionate towards Brahmins. Although he knew very well that it was the demigods who had come to him in the dress of Brahmins, at their request, he delivered to them his duration of life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Virochana, Bali's father, was so pleased with the Brahmin community that even though he knew that those approaching him for charity were the demigods in the dress of Brahmins, he nonetheless agreed to give it. Pita prarada putraste tudvidvan dvijabatsalaha svayamayor dvijalingebhyo svamayor dvijalingebhyo devebhyo datsyachitaha. Your father Virochana, the son of Maharaj Prahlad, was very affectionate towards Brahmins. Although he knew very well that it was the demigods who had come to him in the dress of Brahmins, at their request he delivered to them the duration of his life. Amagyana tamarandasa jananjana salakaya chakshura militam yena tasmai shi guruve namaha vanchakalpa tarubhischa kripa sindhubhye vicha pititanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I think the story goes that Virochana approached was approached and requested by Brahmins who asked him for charity, and they in typical fashion said, we'll give you whatever you want. And they said, we want your head. So he immediately took out a sharp instrument and delivered his head. I'm not quite sure how he did it. I'll leave that to your imagination. But the point is that this is the story. I think it's in the Chandogya Upanishad, one of the Upanishads. Let me just have a look. The Chandogya Upanishad, apparently. In this chapter, Lord Vamanadeva is praising the family of Bali Maharaj, especially for their magnanimity. They're never fleeing from battle, for their keeping their word, for their honesty, and for their generosity towards the Brahminical class. The Kshatriyas are never meant to be the opposite, which is described in this chapter as low-minded and miserly. So this is an important point. We can discuss a little bit here the relevance in this class of this verse and the short purport. Particularly, I think I'd like to focus a little on the relationship between the administrative class and the educators, the Brahminical class. Actually, in one lecture, one morning walk, Srila Prabhupada was asked, what will the Brahmins do? And Srila Prabhupada said, teach. Generally speaking, Brahmins are teachers. So anyone here is a teacher. You can be pleased with class this morning. You're a Brahmin. But generally, that is the function. Those functions are given in the Nectar of Instructions to 6 functions of the Brahminical class: to learn Shastra, to teach Shastra, to perform deity worship, to teach how to perform deity worship, and to receive charity and to give in charity. We could mention something about giving charity to the Brahmins, but Badranga actually gave me the policy for giving class, and told me I shouldn't have any personal agendas. It's very interesting because Shastra is meant for application. Knowledge is meant for application. In fact, Chanakya Pandit has said that the Brahmin who is well-versed in Shastra but has no experience of life is equal to a mudha. He didn't mince his words. So how is this relevant to us? I think I will read that verse if I can find it. And I thought it was very interesting because I'm getting lost here. But let me see if I can find that verse. It comes a little later on. No, I've lost it. Anyway, I was going to mention there's whole debates about, I think there was a whole conference on wages for sages. There's a whole issue about should we pay devotees for service, and it's quite an interesting debate. And if Bhadranga would excuse me, there's a quote in here somewhere about how the Brahmins were given wives, villages, cows, and so on. And I think it would be interesting to discuss that, but I'm not going to do it at the moment. But what I'm going to look at is what the relationship, what's going on here? How is this relevant to us? And particularly, what is the relationship between the Brahmins and the Brahmin class and the Kshatriya class? And is this relevant to us? I'm going to asking some questions here. Is this relevant to us? And the first question I want to ask is whether or not we are not transcendental to all this discussion here. Are we not above this? And Pati, I'll come to this. It's also connected to that another contentious subject, which is Varnashram, which is interesting. And are we actually, what is our relationship as devotees to these affairs of the world and to Varnashram? So we'll discuss that. I'm going to ask a few questions. The first one is, are we transcendental to mundane morality and to culture? And in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada says, the Vaishnav is transcendental. But we do not think we are Vaishnavs. We are not so impudent. Srila Prabhupada uses that word, impudent. So, there's very little theological support, I would suggest, for actually claiming we are transcendental. I think there's one, probably there's one kind of feature in our theology, in our tradition, and that's the Avaduta. And Rasamrita Swami mentioned Lord Nityananda a couple of days ago, and the proverb that even if we see Lord Nityananda entering a liquor house, or in English terms, a pub, we should not doubt his integrity. So Lord Nityananda is well known as an avaduta. The word avaduta has even entered into our ISKCON lingo. You probably notice we have some language that we tend to use in ISKCON that other people outside of ISKCON don't always recognize. And one of the words that we have is avaduta. You know how it's used for that kind of brahmachari who's a little kind of eccentric? Do you have that word? And you say, oh, he's a bit of an avaduta. So there is actually, it's certainly there. But if you look at our theology or our philosophy, there is very little endorsement for us thinking that we are transcendental to this material world and the laws of this material world. And I'll read from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 3, verse 21 onwards. And you'll know this, of course. Whatever action a great man performs, this is the verse, Yod Yod Acharati Shrestas Tattadevasu Janaha. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. O son of Pratah, There is no work prescribed for me, and Krishna speaking, remember, within all the three planetary systems. Nor am I in want of anything, nor have I any need to obtain anything. And yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. For if I ever failed to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Pata, certainly all men would follow my path. If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would therefore destroy the peace of all living beings. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to the results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. A self-realized man has no purpose to perform in the discharge of his prescribed duties, but nor does he have any duty, nor does he have any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any living being. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the Supreme. Kings such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people, you should perform your work. So if King Janak and even Lord Krishna himself performs duties, I think there's very little basis theologically for us to claim that we are transcendental to this world and the laws of this world. And I'd like to move on to ask, theologically, what is included in that which is transcendental and what is excluded? I personally think that actually trying to understand transcendence by negating this world is problematic. I'm going to give one example from the first six chapters of the Gita. You know, the Gita is divided into three parts. And of course, the first six chapters of the Gita are summarized very neatly by Srila Prabhupada in one place as explaining the various types of yoga which culminate in bhakti yoga in the sixth chapter. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the bhakti yoga is the culmination of all yogas. Actually, I've got one quote from, I think, from the Wedd Sutapa. Are you Sutapa? Sutapa Prabhu, I think you wrote this. At least it's associated with you on the website. While the process may appear simplistic, this is the Bhaktivedanta Manor website, when practiced with sincerity and purity, it actually combines and synthesizes other disciplines. Is that your writing? It is, yeah. So the idea that it includes the other, and by other disciplines, I think you mean the other yogas. Yeah, I'd probably add the word I'm putting on my editor's hat. Fulfills, right? It completes them. It redeems them. In other words, Krishna explains these yogas not for us to say they're all useless and bhakti yoga. Otherwise, why does he explain them if they are all useless? Why does Krishna go through the whole, not just the first six chapters, but the whole, entire Gita, and then say, Sarvadharman Parikyagya, give these all up? Is that what he's saying? That everything he's spoken is really useless? Naturally, that's not a correct view. In actual fact, Bhakti Yoga includes aspects of Karma Yoga, of Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, those are the main ones, of course, and others also, Sankhya Yoga, Bodhi Yoga, mentioned. It fulfills them. So in a sense, it includes them. And in the Bhagavatam, I don't have a reference. I think it may be the first canto, second chapter, but you can tell me. Or it might be the second canto. Narayana Paramaka, Narayana Paragyanam, Narayana Paro Yogo, Narayana Paragatihi. I'm not quoting exactly in the order, but there, Narayan is the purpose of sacrifice, which is second canto. Thank you. Oh, Vasudeva is also mentioned. Oh, Narayan. Yes. Okay. For intensive purposes, the same. So Narayan is, or Vasudev is the purpose of sacrifice, which is often associated with karma yoga. He's the purpose of knowledge, or the path of knowledge. He is the goal of that. He is the ultimate goal of the yogis, and he's the ultimate goal of life. So actually, in a sense, all these yogas are included and fulfilled within bhakti yoga. Our transcendence is inclusive, and I think we should be very, very careful, therefore, about condemning these other forms of yoga. We understand, of course, without Krishna, without Narayan, without Vasudev, they will not bear the ultimate fruit of life. However, they are integrated within the system. I thought, I was looking for a quote, and I came across one by Shakespeare. And this is in Julius Caesar. I think this quote, actually, interestingly, we always in England, it's great here because we can always quote Shakespeare and he's accepted immediately as a Mahajan. That's fine. And perhaps there's some benefit from preaching in this way. One will find he's very insightful, actually. And this verse is actually on, it's actually on what we would call false humility. It's listed under feigned humility or pretending humility. A very interesting subject, I think. What is humility? I mean, the problem with values is, you know, values, you can talk about them very easily. And you'll notice that even politicians talk about values, which makes it slightly suspicious. Of course, politicians, some of them do have values. Regrettably, we see that the integrity that is needed for a leader has often been compromised with many of the news about the expenses scams. It's rather sad that that integrity is going. But leaders, they have to have that. But they speak about values all the time. If you hear them giving a talk or whatever, they're always speaking about values and choice and freedom of speech and inclusivity and so on. The real problem is that actually, until we actually look at the kind of behavior that's associated with values, it's hard to get a real understanding of those values. There's certain conduct associated with them. And I think it's interesting to see that if we look at humility, we can ask the question, what is humility? What is not humility? But we can also ask the question, what is false humility? And I'll read from Shakespeare, of course, because it's about 500 years old. The English is a little difficult. But he says, 'Tis a common proof. That means it's common experience. That lowliness, or humility, is young ambition's ladder. But when he once attains the utmost round, that means the top rung of the ladder, he then unto the ladder turns his back, looks in the clouds, scorning the base degrees meaning the lower rungs, by which he did ascend. So we talk about the yoga ladder, so perhaps this is relevant. We have to be very careful in Krishna consciousness not to kind of break those lower steps in the name of transcendence. And that's what I'd like to come to as the theme of this class today, is we need to actually look at those things that support our Krishna consciousness. And particularly, I'd like to look at culture a little bit, which is being discussed here. In this chapter, it's interesting. There are so many issues to do with morality, are so many to do with values, behavior, also etiquette, I think, is a very important issue. Etiquette is, I was speaking with my wife, how etiquette doesn't, and others recently, how etiquette doesn't seem so popular these days. Previously in any society, at least amongst the cultured ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sure it goes for Italy, I'm sure it goes for the mafia, there would be some rules, some etiquette. You have to do it, yeah. If even at the beginning of the film The Godfather, there's a whole discussion on etiquette. Yeah, right at the beginning. Not that you wouldn't necessarily accept those values. But the idea of etiquette is there, and it is extremely important, actually, in how we develop our values. And there are some questions about how do we develop those values. Is it simply through our sadhana? Now, we cannot underestimate the value of our sadhana and the morning program and of chanting the holy names. However, there are other ways by which we develop values, particularly through our interactions, our social interactions, as this section is dealing with. We could call that sadhu sangha. How do we deal with each other? What are some of the social dynamics within any ISKCON community? What is the style of leadership? What is valued in that community? What is not valued? What is scorned? What kind of language do we have? What kind of words do we have that value certain things and demote the value of other things? So culture, I'm going to suggest, is extremely important in our dealings and in our developing a Krishna-conscious society. We need to develop a culture. There's a lot to discuss, isn't there? I mean, it's quite common that when we join, when we become, I know we don't like the word converts. We don't like that word for good reason, or recruit. But recently we found when I was in Radhadesh at the college, we were using it to differentiate those who join ISKCON by giving up a particular tradition. And those who were born, we call them second generation devotees. They were born with one or two parents who were devotees. We often call those second generation. So we use that word. We don't like it, but I couldn't think of a better word. But we often find that those of us who made that kind of change, that we actually adopted in this culture, we very often give up our, or we jettison, or we reject our the culture into which we were born. And I would like to question whether that is actually necessary. Or even useful. I think to some degree it's natural as we take on a new path, as we take on Krishna consciousness, as we aspire to be reborn and to get a new name and get a new life and so on. The question is, what happens if we actually jettison not only our cultural capital but our moral capital? We were perhaps born with certain values. Perhaps even we've got some of those values already. Would it not be better to actually acknowledge those? So I think what I'm trying to convey here is that if we actually are cultural, if we have a culture, if we are actually very moral, then that really helps with our spiritual life, particularly when our spiritual life gets into difficulty. Now, I don't think any of us, and I'm ready for you to challenge me, doesn't go through difficulties with our spiritual life at some time. And sometimes, yeah, it's a crisis. I do recall being here in 1973 and asking Harikesh Swami, as he was then, my mind is disturbed. And he's told me, what do you expect? He says, you're fighting. How do you think Arjuna felt on the battlefield? How do you think what he felt when Karna knocked off his crown? He was fighting. So actually, it should not surprise us that sometimes the mind is disturbed, nor that we meet difficulties in spiritual life. But if we don't have a basic morality, it will be more difficult for us to endure those difficulties in life, in Krishna consciousness. I'm going to try and support this. We finish at 8:30. Okay. Just looking for some quote. Bear with me a little bit. Of course, what is interested here, and I'm leading to, is the need for a Brahminical culture in the mode of goodness, that we can't actually fail to develop that. Okay, I'm going to read a quote. I didn't quite get the one I wanted. I'll see if I can find it. This is an interesting quote because I'm coming back to Varnashram. Because Varnashram is about dharma. Dharma means morality. One meaning. It's very strongly connected to dharma. Now, I've heard many classes in which devotees reject Varnashram based on the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. But here's a room conversation dated the 14th of February, 1977. And it's between Srila Prabhupada and Satsvarup, or Satsvarup Goswami. Prabhupada, either educate them or control them. Give them facility of education. I think he's talking about the mass of people. But there is no education at all. Even for the whites, there is no education. I'm not sure where Srila Prabhupada is here. So we are stressing on the point of education. You can educate certain section as Brahman, certain section as Kshatriya, certain section as Vaishya. In that education, we don't discriminate. It's a really interesting statement. Srila Prabhupada has just said, we educate some as Brahmins, some as Kshatriyas, some as Vaishyas, and then he says, in that education, we don't discriminate. It's interesting. What he means is everyone must have an education, of course. Take education, be qualified. Then you talk, not by votes. Satsvarup. Lord Chaitanya, when Ramananda Roy brought this up, said it was not possible in this age to introduce this. Prabhupada, yes, not. He did not say possible. Iha bahya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was interested only on the spiritual platform. He had no idea of material side. He rejected material side. Satsvarup. But don't we do that also? Srila Prabhupada. No. Our position is different. We are trying to implement Krishna consciousness in everything. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally took sannyas. He rejected completely the material, niskinchana. But we are not going to be niskinchana. We are trying to cement the troubled position of the, I'm guessing Srila Prabhupada was going to say world. That is also in the prescription of Bhagavad Gita. We are not rejecting the whole society. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected everything here, bahya. Rejected meaning, I do not take much interest in this, bahya. It is external. He was simply interested in the internal, the spiritual. But our duty is that we shall arrange the external affairs also so nicely that one day they will come to the spiritual platform very easily. Srila Prabhupada is rejecting the idea that we have to have nothing to do with this world and we're not interested in this world. We are interested in this world. We are interested in preaching. We're interested in that. And preaching here is clearly indicated, setting the example. It's absolutely clear here. I'm just going to finish off with one verse from the Narada Bhakti Sutra, which shows that we should actually cultivate qualities. By the way, there's a whole discussion. Do we consciously develop qualities, or do they just come automatically without thinking about them? The point is, and Radhana Swami made this point in a lecture in response to a question, which admittedly I asked. he said, why are there so many stories here to do with dilemmas, moral dilemmas, and qualities and virtues, unless we're meant to engage with them consciously and think about them? This is, in Aristotle's terms, it's virtue ethics. We want to become a Vaishnav or Vaishnavi in terms of those qualities. We are thinking about those things. Am I developing those qualities? Where am I falling short, as we all do? We're engaging with those actively. One should cultivate such good qualities as non-violence, truthfulness, cleanliness, compassion, and faith. Purport. By listing prominent virtues and using the word adi, indicating that there are many others, that means beginning with, Narada reminds us that bhakti has to be situated on a foundation of good behavior. A bhakta cannot be a coarse fool and rascal. Srila Prabhupada was once asked by a TV interviewer, how would I be able to tell a devotee of Krishna? Prabhupada replied, he would be wearing tilak and a dhoti. No, that's not it. Prabhupada replied, he would be a perfect gentleman. There's a lot to discuss here. And I think it's interesting to consider the need for culture, the need for education. And in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that leadership is meant to deliver Krishna consciousness in three ways: through devotion, through culture, and through education. And therefore, as this chapter progresses, we can actually explore more what is the role of culture, albeit a devotional culture, backed with spiritual education, in spreading Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you. Any questions or comments?